Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Oh, well, good morning there. I hope you're doing well. Thanks for joining us. My name is Matt Rose, and welcome to the program. It's the big show in the morning on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. We're live on location, myself, and today, Danny Austin, once again, guest hosting for the rest of the week. Good morning, my man. How are you?
My guy, I am doing well. I'm well rested here. You're out of the Flames charity golf tournament.
Yeah.
Life's pretty good right now. I'm excited for this one. It's going to be a little bit different than the past couple ones we've done, I think, but I'm looking forward to it. That's the truth.
It's going to be a lot of fun because I think there's going to be a lot of the Flames here this year. They've held this tournament kind of over the last couple of years, but they haven't really been able to do it in earnest. The reception last year was held in a parking lot. This year it's going to be back at the Saddle Dome with the whole nine yards. But, yes, we are live at Country Hills Golf Course for the Calgary Flames Charity Golf Tournament in support of the Flames Foundation. We'll be talking about the Flames Foundation all day long as they do a lot of good stuff for Southern Alberta, not just sports in Southern Alberta, but health and wellness, education, donated a lot of money as far as their COVID-19 community support program went as we all dealt with the damages of the pandemic. So we'll get into a little bit of what the Flames Foundation has done over the past year and how you can help support. And honestly, one of the biggest things, the 50-50. You look at their revenue from last season, 94%. Of what they brought in for the Flames Foundation came from the 50-50. So that's just the fans getting down to the dome, or even I know you can do it on your phone online nowadays. You can just fire up the old 50-50 and buy tickets anytime that the Flames play. And when you do that, you're supporting a bunch of great initiatives throughout all of Southern Alberta, especially here in Calgary. So that's something that I think a lot of people can be proud about.
Yeah, I mean, I legitimately bought tickets for every playoff game. I will be honest with you, that was not entirely altruistic. I'd love to win some of that 50-50.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, would go a long way. Might buy myself a boat.
A boat?
I don't know if that's
where
I'd
you
buy.
Go.
That's
a boat?
Not really where I'd go. I think I have more pressing.
You know, boats are a bit money pit, and, you know, there's not all lakes around here.
You know, can I tell you a story?
Small amount of lakes.
2013.
Okay.
I was on Kijiji, and there was a free boat. And I went to meet my buddies, and I was like, guys, let's go pick up this free boat. My buddy and my friend Shane was like, how are you going to pick up a free boat? And I was too broke to get a free boat. And
get a free boat.
Because I didn't have a trailer. I had no way of picking it up, nowhere to store it. And I was too broke for a free boat.
Man, that's down bad.
It was a humbling moment.
Yeah, for sure. You come a long way. You got your own car now.
I did.
You're wearing a collared shirt today.
You know, I said to you yesterday, I was like, what do we wear? Because I'll be honest with you, I've been wearing hoodies in the studio the last couple of days, dressing for comfort.
Yeah.
I said, what do we wear? You said, look, man, put on a collared shirt. come looking sharp. I hope I met your standards today. I got a blue sweater on over a white collared shirt. I got some slacks.
You look country club adjacent. That's what I would say.
You know, I try.
Yeah, if you were walking out of the country club, I would assume that he either was there or maybe he got thrown out. But one of those two, I would assume it's probably a true thing.
So you look like you're going to golf today.
I am going to golf today. There's going to be some group of season ticket holders or sponsors that are so disappointed they get slapped with me. So we're going to have to put on a bit
of a
show.
And then they're going to learn how lucky they are to have you in their group. They're gonna be very happy with
That's
what they get from Matty Rose.
Very kind of you.
You know, I looked at the media celebrities. There's no one I'd want more than Matty Rose.
Really?
In my group of golfers.
I don't know, man. Who's coming here today? Let's take a list. So we're going to be trying to pull a bunch of individuals as they roll in for the tournament. And like I mentioned, one of the cooler things this year is that actual players from the team this season are going to be able to participate. They weren't able to because of COVID. You had to kind of keep everybody away for the last few seasons. But look at this. Just where we are going to be particularly, Anderson, Backlund, Coleman, Dubé, Huberto, Rebecca Johnston is going to be here after she was hired
Kadri.
By the Flames yesterday. Kadri, Lindholm, Mackey, Markstrom, Toffoli, Valimaki, Vladar, Uyghur. That's who you got for current Flames that are going to be coming to visit us.
You got some good alumni out there, too. You got Lanny McDonald. You got Brian McGraden. You got Jamie McCown. You got lots of them. Plus, we missed
Regier.
Smoothest man in the game, Ryan Leslie.
There are going to be some other media members that I would position that are actual celebrities, like a Ryan Leslie. I know Eric Francis is going to be out and about as well, taking part in this one. So, yeah, we're looking forward to it. And it's one of those kind of moments, like we've talked about, where it feels like the Flames season is here. A lot of the players are doing informal skates and those type of things. There's going to be some availabilities with some of the Flames players today, too. So we love all of that. And the Young Stars tournament is coming up this weekend. We actually got given the roster for Young Stars yesterday, which was kind of wild.
Yeah, I don't think it feels like hockey season's here. I think hockey season's here. I think we're there. I think we made it.
That's what we're moving to?
I mean, we're you know what? If we're not there, we're pretty close. But you know, my full-time job happens to be writing for the Calgary Sun and the Calgary Herald in the sports section, and I can tell you, we got Flames content coming too. You know, it's so I know it's here because I see what our sections look like, and you know, it's happening, and we're talking about it here. We got all these guys. For me, I don't know what else would be. What other indicators we need? Hockey's back.
Yeah, we had some video. There was an interview with Nazem Kadri on the Flames Twitter yesterday. And like I mentioned, we did get the roster for the Penticton Young Stars Tournament. Three games coming up for the Calgary Flames over the course of the weekend. They'll play 7:30 against the Edmonton Oilers. They will play Saturday's going to be against the Oilers. Friday is against the Canucks. And then Monday at 11 a.m., it's going to be against the Winnipeg Jets. They'll get through those three games, and then it'll be pretty much preseason time for the Flames. Just a week after that will be their kind of opening preseason split squad set up with the Vancouver Canucks. But when you look at the list of the roster for the prospect camp, you know, there's guys that you recognize. There's some that you probably don't that are there on professional tryouts or amateur tryouts.
But I mean, there's some guys, like, legitimately, if you are in Penticton and you're a big Flames fan, I mean, you got Dustin Wolf.
Yep.
You got Jacob Peltier. You got Connor Zary. Going further down, I mean, I want to see Cole Schwind play. So, 100%. You know, we talked about him all summer, I feel like, and none of us have seen him play a second of hockey. So, for me, I mean, again, I think it's just that time of the year where you're ready to get excited, but it's a good, fun little roster there.
As far as the draft picks go, yes, Zarian Pelche, Jack Beck, Cole Huckins, Lucas Folk, Lucas Siona, Ilya Nikolaev, Emilio Pettersson, Cole Schwint, Rory Karens, Dustin Wolf, Daniil Chechelev, Yan Kuznetsov, Jeremy Poirier, Cameron Wynot, Cole Jordan, and Ilya Solovyov would be the prospects, and then there's a handful of tryouts who are hanging out as well. And then I did mention Rebecca Johnston, hired to work within the player development team, assisting in prospect evaluations and on-ice instruction, and also working with the Flames Foundation in some of the grassroots programs growing hockey in our community. And I know she did an interview with the guys yesterday. She said it's not her closing the book on her playing career, but just taking a little bit of a breather, perhaps just writing a chapter before the final chapter of her hockey playing career. So you love to see it. She's, you know, we've been able to have her at some events for Sportsnet 960, and she definitely has always been a pleasure to be around. So
she's like one of the most. She's just incredibly likable. Like,
oh, extremely.
You know, incredible athlete, super cool. And yeah, I mean, she's not of the age where you'd expect her to be retiring just yet. I mean, she's still a high-end elite hockey talent. Mm-hmm. So, but I mean, I don't have a ton of comparisons, but it makes sense. I mean, I assume that she's still able to train a fair bit and make this work. And at 32, I'd certainly expect her to still be in the mix for the national team.
So we are here. We're at Country Hills. We're at the golf course getting set for the Flames Charity Golf Tournament, and we're looking forward to it. What is your relationship with golf like?
I mean, like, it's – I wouldn't say it's
– because we're going to get into it with Dave Dickinson just after 7 o'clock.
So I don't golf is the reality. I – in my undergrad year, spent two summers working at the Thornhill Golf and Country Club. It's a private club. Stanley Thompson, I believe. That's his name.
That's where you were...
Designed course, yeah.
Raised?
Oh, I was not raised anywhere near Thornhill. It was actually really, like, it was probably a good 35-minute drive out of downtown Toronto to this course. But, you know, I was on the greens crew. I was cutting grass, making the course look presentable, and it was a beautiful course, I gotta say. Like, it was legitimately shorter course because it was an older course, so not cool. You know, not PGA.
You're not like 7,000 yards or something.
No, but it was, you know, for its time, probably one of the better courses, certainly in southern Ontario. I was dating a girl there. The relationship didn't go particularly well, so I associate those memories with kind of my time on the golf course. And then, you know, moved out here, and I wouldn't say that the early years of a career in journalism were necessarily, you know, drowning in disposable income. So I haven't really golfed a ton over the past 10 years.
Yeah, that's very fair. But you liked working at a golf course? You know, I tried to work at a golf course. It's the only job I did not get that I applied for.
Really? I'll say that as a 21-year-old who had sort of lived the college lifestyle, I could have, it was good for me to be at the golf course at 5:30 in the morning and really doing hard physical work. I lost a bunch of weight. I got, you know, I feel like I looked pretty good coming out of that first summer. But
not, your better half didn't feel the same way, but
I mean, shout out her, great, wonderful woman. I have a lot of respect for her. But yeah, I actually really enjoyed it. It was good work, and to be honest, I think that as a young man, you know, the golf course work tends to be pretty meticulous. You got to be careful with what you're doing. Yes, you're cutting grass, but they want it perfect, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that there was value in me learning that. Not to be like overly sincere in a segment about working on a golf course when I was 21, but that was a good job for me. I'm happy I did.
Well, I think that there's a lot of different jobs you can get when you're young. You can kind of learn different type of important life lessons. That one, now, early bird gets the worm.
I will say that one of the problems with that job was we did get free golf because you're done at sort of 2:30, and I think we had to wait half an hour, but not the busiest time for a private course that is largely older people playing there. But they wouldn't let us get golf carts, so you'd be walking around mowing lawns, like just walking all day, and then you thought this was this great bonus that you were gonna be able to golf every day, and then
would have no entry.
Yeah, they wouldn't let us have golf courses or golf carts. I apologize.
The course I'm a member at, I every year I'm like, I'm gonna walk so much more, but there's literally like two holes that the walk itself is like directly up a hill. Like there's one between a par four and a par five that's like a 7-minute uphill climb, and I'm like, it's worth it. It's worth the cart fee.
I would have paid the cart. We were not allowed to get carts.
Really?
After
full stop.
After 8 hours of like, effectively, I mean, I wasn't digging a mine here. Like let's not pretend that this was like the most difficult thing. But you were walking. I mean, if I had a step counter at the time, I'm sure I was walking 30,000 steps a day, and then play 18 wasn't gonna happen.
No, it definitely wasn't. Well, that's good. I'm happy for you.
I will say, as you know, I spent a lot of time in Vegas. Mm-hmm. So I've spent many a night at that high, I don't know what you call that driving range. You know,
Topgolf. Yeah.
I was mostly there to, you know, drink.
Booze and
to booze
be and, a problem.
Yeah, and cavort. But, yeah, I spent a lot of time there. That was great. So, look, I'm not the biggest golfer. I sometimes, off-air, joke around about golf a little bit, give you a hard time. But,
yeah.
I played tennis growing up. That
I know
my...
it's just all seems seeps through in jealousy type of sense. So,
look, you want to play me in a racket sport, I'll put you right in the mud.
Probably will. I do like to play a little bit of tennis, but I'm also quite fresh at the sport. I'm not very good at it. Did you play tennis a lot when you were growing up?
I played tennis growing up, so that was my main. I mean, I have said this, and I will, you know, I'll put it out there on it. I eventually transitioned out of tennis because I was a camp kid, so I couldn't get the training in to get to the level that I, you know, wanted to.
Oh, yeah, I did.
And transitioned.
Scheduling.
Yeah, transitioned into into table tennis, and I remain
ping pong.
I am the best ping pong player I've ever met. who does not play actively competitively. And I'm going to say that.
I've heard you say it before.
Our friend Max Campbell laughed at me last year. And
Who's former with the Stampeders.
Former with the Stampeders. And I wiped the floor with him.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting. Is that the sport that you would say you're best at? It's tough because then you have to call it a sport.
It's a sport. I mean, the way we play it probably wouldn't be a sport. But currently, I'm bad at pool. I would say of all the things that, men in their late 30s can do without actively training to continue to play, so you can just pick it up and go play.
Well, how many sports like that are there?
I mean, darts.
Okay.
I'm not good at darts. I'm not good at pool.
You're talking about bar sports, about what you're talking about. And, spike ball, which you play in the park. Even then, that's not for 30.
Spike ball's not for... Yeah. You're playing spike ball. You can look really stupid playing spike ball.
Yeah, that's a fair point by you, yeah.
But, I played foosball. So just so we're clear that when I say this about table tennis, I'm not like this about every... I played foosball on a double date a number of years ago, and the girl I was dating said that I was worse than someone who had never played before. on a date.
Nice.
So when I say this, but... Yes.
So when's the wedding?
So, table tennis, I suppose, of that type of thing, I would like to say the sport that I've been best at was basketball, but not anymore.
But that's the one that you played. Then, of course, you popped your calf. We talked about that a little bit earlier on.
Basketball and tennis were sort of my go-to as a kid.
That's where we talked about stretching a lot.
It was a great segment. Mm-hmm. I thought we nailed that one.
It was ideal.
But yeah, I mean, I've said, and I don't want to challenge professional athletes, but there is not, a Stampeder or a Flame. I think I would beat them.
In table tennis?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Any single Stampeder?
Yep. They beat me in most things, but I got the spins.
I'm going to talk to Dave Dickinson at 7 o'clock alongside you, and All right, go ahead and write that down. Danny can beat anybody at table tennis. Good for you. You see, you got spins. So
I got crazy spins.
Do you have a custom racket?
I have rackets at home.
Mm-hmm.
To be perfectly honest with you, I was invited to the opening of a sporting goods store last October.
Yes.
And they very strangely gave us $100 gift cards.
Oh.
Which was enough to just buy a lot of sporting stuff, but not anything big. I wasn't going to buy a stand-up paddleboard with $100, but I did. Included in my package of things that I purchased with that $100 gift card were table tennis paddles.
So you could get table tennis paddles, some new laces... maybe some soccer shin pads for kids.
To be honest, I got snowshoes.
You
got
snowshoes?
I did.
You got snowshoes and table tennis rackets with this $100 gift. They were you are a weirdo, dude.
At the time, I was really
you have to go to the very back aisles to get all the stuff that you chose?
The snowshoes were relatively front and center. And I got very into hiking during the pandemic and was convinced that had become a habit that I was going to keep for the rest of my life. Largely didn't happen.
Yeah.
Largely,
the rest of your life, we've barely been out of the pandemic for
I didn't hike that much this summer. What do you want me to tell you?
Okay, that's a fair point. Yeah.
That's really all the evidence I have suggests that I'm not just going to go out twice a week to the mountains, and that's not who I am. But I did buy snowshoes. I used them a little bit this winter. They were a great purchase.
How did you find them?
I was in the store, and they were on the rack.
No, but, transitioning into using snowshoes, I've never worn them.
Oh, honestly... right now, you could put them on if there was snow and use them. Snowshoes are not hard. They literally just have spikes that go in.
Are they heavy?
No. They're very light. I walked up several mountains.
Really?
Yeah, including, I guess we're just giving Max all the shout-outs today, but including with Max, we went up hodling in Canmore. It was delightful.
Well, good for you.
Yeah, I recommend snowshoeing for anybody. Really? I'm not going to cross-country ski. I'm not that keen.
My parents
keen.
Do cross-country skiing. They love it.
I believe that they do. I think people who do it love it, but... I think it's hard.
Yeah, see, I always loved skiing with my family and snowboarding, but a lot of the appeal was the kind of gliding and lack of effort required, and all of a sudden you want to just go flat and up hills on skis.
I will say some very cool people I know love cross-country skiing. I will actually not badmouth it, but it does seem like a lot of work. And I'm sure part of their thing is you get to see stuff in the mountains during the winter that guys like you and I, without our skis, don't get to see. So I understand the appeal, but Yeah, that's my story.
They got a good little track over at COP. They used to have one that kind of went around the back of the hill there and over on the, what would that have been?
Like
kind of the south side? No, not like the top of the hill, but like the south side almost over by where the ski jumps were.
Okay.
And where the zip line is. There was like a path over there a while ago, but I haven't been to COP in years to do any snowboard thing. I played hockey there earlier this week, but that's pretty much it.
Well, I mean, I haven't skied or snowboarded there in a while, but amazing facility. There's a video of me refusing to do the bungee jumping from a couple years back.
Bungee jumping is terrifying, dude.
It's not actually bungee jumping, what they have, but it's you jump off a high platform. Not for me.
I did it in New Zealand when I was, would have been probably like 20 years old at the time. 20 years old, something like that. Went to New Zealand and did the Nevis bungee, which is one of the biggest ones in the world.
I think I know which one you're talking about.
Yeah, it's like 147 meters or 137 meters. It's a long way. At the time, it was the second biggest one in the world, and the biggest was something in Thailand. So
this is insane.
Yeah, it's a real long drop, and I have never been more terrified in my life. I have the video of me doing it, and you do the jump. And the jump is fine, and the video looks fine because the video is taken from a very far distance, but then I come back up into the kind of shack that they chuck you out of, and I am just, like, shaking. And not like a small vibration, like a very visible, almost like 2-inch gyration of my hands because I was terrified. And earlier on that trip, we had gone skydiving. No problem. No problem.
That's what
whatsoever.
I've heard. And to be honest, like I really don't like heights at all. But what I watched, I mean, did you see that Redman got his skydiving certificate last week?
I don't know who Redman is.
God, I'm much older than you. Redman, I don't know, quite prominent. I'd say late 90s, early 2000s rappers, did several albums with Method Man.
Sure.
Redman rules. I would argue that the best MTV Cribs ever was done with Redman.
Okay.
I can't describe him any other way.
No, I think that's enough.
Anyways,
continue.
Last week, just on Twitter, just put out a video, and Redman has gotten his skydiving certification. Has done over 200 jumps.
Really?
Yeah.
It's a lot.
It's not for me.
Yeah. I would skydive again in a heartbeat. Like, I did it once when I was in New Zealand, and then a few years later, I did it again in Hawaii. And, if someone was like, let's go right now, I probably would. But I also, it's kind of expensive. It's a pricey hobby. And also, it is dangerous. There's that. You bring up a good point.
Yeah, I'm not doing it. I'm not going bungee jumping. I will also say that I've just realized that I don't know how to spell bungee. I thought it was double E at the end, not Y.
I thought it was, too.
Yeah, well, the Nevis, they go Nevis with a Y, so. You know, we're learning.
I feel like I should have known that because I have literally the DVD. I got buckled with some friends recently, and I demanded that they watch it.
I'd watch it with you.
Yeah, it's something I pull out all the time.
Yeah. Like, literally, when you when you type in Nevis Bungee double E, Google says, did you mean with a Y? So.
I don't know how much higher it is or where it ranks anymore, but if you're ever going down to visit the Kiwis, 134 meters is what it is. Yeah. It's far.
Did you go to the little Hobbit village while you were in New Zealand?
We didn't go to the Hobbit village.
I've heard it's not that good.
But we did go to this one national park. And
there were hobbits?
No, we knew that it was one of the parks and areas that they had shot some of the first film in. And sure enough, we're walking along the path, and we found the exact kind of ridge where Frodo and the gang had to drop down beneath the road
and hide
from the riders. And, underneath the big root, we found like that exact spot.
That's cooler than Hobbit Village, in my opinion.
Yeah, so that was pretty neat. And then we stayed out there for a little while. It was pretty cool. Yeah,
New Zealand. Like you had a lovely trip to New Zealand.
Yeah, it was 2 months in a van with two other dudes. It was great. It was one of those just after high school chaos type of lives.
We should try to get Travel New Zealand as a sponsor. I think we're really selling people on the trip.
Mm. Yeah, sure. More sponsors, more better. Get them all involved. Hey, we got to get to the morning report. We got some things I want to tell you about, including was it on Monday we were talking about Chris Tanev? Someone had asked if
it would have been Monday or Tuesday. It was one of the 2 days. I think it was probably Monday.
It was with you, though, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so that was Monday then when someone asked if Chris Tanev was going to be ready for the season.
Yeah, this was big news. Yeah.
We got a little bit of an update yesterday at the luncheon. I'll tell you more around the corner when we get into the morning report.
I love that someone from the text line asked you a question. You took it upon yourself to go out and get an answer. That's good journalism right there.
I'll say I didn't do it, but I'll take credit.
I was giving you credit.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah. I appreciate it. All right, we'll take a break. Morning Report's coming up next. Sports at 960 The Fan. Let's get into it. It's time for the Morning Report. It's brought to you by Motorworks, exceeding all expectations, BMW repairs and service in a state-of-the-art facility where they'll meet and beat all competitors' quotes on 51st Ave and 3rd Street Southeast.
Marty Rose.
Matt Rose.
Matt Rose.
Good morning and welcome into the Morning Report. Listen, we got lots to get to. We had a signing in the NHL, an extension for another young forward. A little bit of an update from Stamps practice, the Jays in action, and some movement in the AL wildcard race. Just the wildcard race in general, the playoff race in the majors, with only 3 weeks left of the regular season. 3 weeks today is the final day of the regular season.
This is a jam-packed Morning Report. We're in, you know, down the stretch run in baseball, hockey heating up, got some Stamps news.
Football will be back tomorrow with the NFL.
Look at us.
And like I mentioned, really we still do have the CFL updates and some good stuff coming from Stamps practice yesterday as well. So let's get into it. Let's start with a little Flames nugget. I believe it was on Monday that someone had texted us about Chris Tanev, his availability for the upcoming season. He had surgery to repair his shoulder injury after that he sustained during last year's postseason run. So we were at the luncheon ahead of the golf tournament yesterday, and there you had a little hot stove there with Assistant General Manager Brad Pascal and the VP of Hockey Operations, Don Maloney. They were answering a few questions from fans, and one of them was about Chris Tanev and when he was going to be available. And Don Maloney told us that he's expected to be ready for the start of training camp, and he has been doing some of these informal skates with his teammates. So, like I had said earlier, I think it was Brad Treliving who had told us that in his last interview that he did with the station. But, once again, good news. Looks like Chris Tanev will be good to go for the start of the year.
I mean, it's huge news, and I don't have it in front of me, but, I mean, when he did get hurt, I mean, at the end of the season, I think that we thought that it was probably going to be sort of November when he was coming back, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, that was generally the timeline that was sort of estimated. Now I don't know if that
it definitely wasn't training camp.
It definitely was not training camp. So we're talking about one of the Flames, in my opinion, most important players. So, you know, that's big news for this team.
Couple of Central Division notes as well. The St. Louis Blues have announced an 8-year contract extension for 24-year-old forward Jordan Kyrou. 8 years, $65 million for an $8.25 million cap hit. 27 goals and 75 points in 74 games this last year, which is a real breakout for Kyrou, who had 35 points in 55 games the season prior. He will play the upcoming season on the final year of a 2-year bridge pact with a $2.8 million AAV. Lots of term and lots of dollar on this Blues roster now. You look at Braden Schenn, Pavel Buchnevich, Brandon Saad, Robert Thomas, Torrey Krug, Colton Parayko, Justin Falk, Nick Leddy, Jordan Binnington, and now Kyrou are all signed for at least the next 3 years at a minimum cap hit of $4 million, that being for Nick Leddy. So free agency for Vlad Tarasenko and Ryan O'Reilly, who are in the final year of their two contracts. This is a big deal for the Blues to get this 24-year-old speedster in, but it creates some intriguing questions moving forward.
Is there a part of this that when you look at this money, you know, we always hear about the cap going up pretty soon here? Is this sort of one of those things where we're seeing that
know.
Affect this?
This is a guy who was a point per game player last season, and he's 24. I think maybe part of this as well is understanding that you were getting him at if it's anything close to the production last season, an unbelievable bargain at $2.8 million. It's kind of the same way Jesperi Kotkaniemi ended up signing that long-term extension with the Carolina Panthers, and maybe the AAV was lower, but he also got, you know, an extra probably couple million of dollars in that offer sheet for that first year. So it's kind of, I don't know, a little bit of the necessary, I don't want to say evil, but necessary business that you have to do to retain good talent, right?
Makes sense.
Elsewhere in Dallas, the Stars announced a one-year extension for general manager Jim Neal through the 23-24 season. They've got a huge question hanging around that team ahead of camp in the contract of Jason Robertson, 23-year-old RFA forward who scored 41 goals and 79 points in 74 games, had one goal and 4 points in 7 games against the Flames in the playoffs, and he remains unsigned and the most intriguing RFA for sure. Frank Cervalli talked about that situation with the boys on Flames Talk Tuesday afternoon.
At age 23, I think the delicate line that these teams walk is, you know, yes, you have your short term that you need to keep an eye on, but you also want to buy as many years of a really talented player as you can at that age, buy his best years, but you're also juggling the cap. And so it's not easy, but I'd imagine that, you know, in the next 10 days here as training camps open, that we'll hear more and more about Jason Robertson.
We talked to Mike Hyka from the Stars website back on September 6th, and he had kind of mentioned that this is a little bit of a wait and see, but this is certainly the biggest story hanging around the Dallas team as we get into this season. There's just so many questions as to what they're going to be able to do in the near future and long term when you've got a couple of tough contracts in Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin.
Yeah, but this is also one that you have to get done.
Without a doubt.
Right? I mean, so that's sort of what... I don't even know if this is confusing.
For me, it's more in the sense of, is it going to be 3 years or is it going to be eight? Right? That's kind of
what I'm
looking at.
If I'm the Stars, I'm going for eight. That's for sure. Right? Uh-huh. So, it you know, I guess it's not going to surprise me if this drags certainly, you know, through training camp a little bit. But if you're the Stars, I mean, you have to move heaven and earth. This is, in my opinion, I mean, this is one of the absolute one or two key building blocks of your future. I think this guy's got superstar potential.
Well, and I think one of the keys that he does that is one of those things that you can't really teach, this is a guy who can score from distance. Like, we saw him, maybe not in the playoffs, because the one goal he scored was kind of like a nasty little rebound chip-in that kind of bounced off his leg. But in the regular season, we saw him rip a couple of absolute snipes against the Calgary Flames. And that's not something that you just find free agency-wise or anything like that. And he's 24 years old. He's a pretty good skater. He's got some really good chemistry with Rupe Hintz, who's another young centerman for that team. Got to get it done.
You got to get it done. And I don't think that, you know, the contract situations of anyone else on the team, a couple guys in their 30s just sort it out because Robertson's your future.
Yeah, 100%. Jays doubleheader against the Rays yesterday, part of a very busy MLB slate. Games 2 and 3 of this 5-game set with Tampa as the Clubs make up some lost games from the delayed start to the season. We expected Alek Manoah for Game 1, but dealing with a little bit of tummy trouble, a little stomach issue, so the club opted to use Julian Merriweather as an opener and then bring in the recently recalled Mitch White for some long work after Merriweather making his fourth appearance of September since he came off the injured list, and not a great showing. He allowed a couple singles to put runners on the corner for the speedy Randy Arozarena.
First and third, Randy Arozarena at the plate. Batting righty on righty. Swings to the first pitch, a ground ball down to third. Chapman's got it. Espinal the pivot. On to first, not in time. Oh, the Blue Jays thought they had two, but the first base umpire, Brennan Miller, said safe at first, and the Rays will take a 1-0 lead.
The run crosses, that would be it for the first inning, but for both the Rays and the Jays, George Springer did single the lead off, but Bo Bichette would eventually ground into a double play to end the first. Mitch White came into the game, pitched a clean second. The Jays kept off the board for the most part as well, facing Jeffrey Springs for the Rays. He was dealing, White was not. Blinking, you might have missed it, but all of a sudden, the bases were loaded for Randy Arozarena in the third inning.
0-1. Ground ball past the right side of the mound, picked up by Espinal, backhanded feed to Bichette. Only going to get one on that play as a run comes in. 0-1. on a line up the left field side. Hernandez on the move there to make the catch. Back in third and tagging. Franco to the plate. Here's the throw. Not in time. Runner goes. The 2-2. Bounding ball wide at third. Out of the reach of Chapman. Glances off the glove and into left field. A base hit. Arozarena speeding around second. On his way to third. Now he wants to go to the plate. And he's going to score. He catches the Blue Jays napping. He aggressively went to third. Did a stutter step around the bag. And then bolted towards the plate, and the Blue Jays had no shot to cut him down at the dish.
Oof, not great. Arozarena starts it with the RBI single, then all of a sudden, 4-0 after he trots around the bases. White would get out of the inning. He'd actually retire the next 6 of 7 batters. He'd actually stay in through the 7th inning while Springs kept the Jays off the board for 6 shutout innings before he was replaced by Sean Armstrong in the bottom of the 7th inning. And Armstrong would allow a single and a walk, but the Jays leave runners on base, turning the game over to the 8th inning, trailing 4-0. David Phelps replacing Mitch White. 3 straight groundouts induced by Phelps to bring Vladdy to the plate. He would single and start a bit of a rally.
The 0-1, ground ball up the middle. Knocked off the body of Armstrong. Runners freeze. Armstrong makes a move to first base. Vladdy snips it out, bolts to the plate and scores. Vladdy takes off, and the Blue Jays have their first run of the day. The 1-2. Swing and a line drive, base hit into left field. Blue Jays back on the board. Bichette cashed in on the ringing single from Matt Chapman.
That would be it for Armstrong. Pete Fairbanks came in to get the final out. He would induce a Danny Jansen grounder to end the rally in the 8th at 4-2. Phelps would stay in the game, knock down 3 batters straight. Raimel Tapia would single. Some catcher interference put George Springer on base. Looked like maybe another opportunity for a comeback, especially after Vladdy struck out. So a couple of outs, and it brought the red-hot Bo Bichette to the dish. Could he do it again?
First and second. Blue Jays trailing 4-2. Bo Bichette with 7 home runs in the last 11 games. The winning run at the plate. And the 3-2 pitch. Bounding ball towards first. Backing up. Renda's got it. He'll underhand it to Fairbanks on first base to finish the ball game and stop the Blue Jays rally in the 9th inning.
Heck. Bo Bichette proves to be mortal. He grounds out to end the game. 4-2 the final score in the first set of a doubleheader, which saw the Rays jump the Jays in the standings, as the Jays had done the night before. Second half of the doubleheader, it did see Alek Manoah take to the mound, fighting through some sort of something, a little tummy trouble. He was facing Yonny Chirinos on the bump, the 28-year-old making just one other major league appearance this season after he missed all of 2021 recovering from Tommy John. Both pitchers got through the first couple of innings no problem, but it was the first batter of the 3rd inning that wrote a little bit of a different story.
3-2. Hit high and deep up the right field line, headed towards the bullpen and gone. Into the second deck for G-Man Choi, his 10th of the season, as the Rays in front 1-0.
1-0 after the 10th home run of the season for Choi. Manoah bounced right back, 3 straight strikes to knock down Jose Siri right after to get back on track. He would allow a single, but no more damage in the inning. Jackie Bradley Jr. would muster a single in the bottom of the inning. Second hit of the game for the Jays, but no runners crossed the plate. So off to the 4th with the Rays leading. Manoah would allow a single, but then secure an out on a pop-out. 1 out, Jonathan Aranda coming to the plate.
Runner from first is going. The 3-2 called a strike. Here's the throw down to the bag, and they got him! Running on 3-2, a strike him out, throw him out, double play. Alejandro Kirk laying it right on the money. And the Blue Jays cut down Peralta trying to move into scoring position.
Manoah would eventually return for the 6th inning. Once again, a very strong inning, minus 1 blip as he hit Harold Ramirez, but would escape having thrown only 85 pitches. So some intrigue into him maybe coming out for the 7th, depending on how things went for the Jays. Vladdy would start the bottom of the 6th with a sharp grounder to 2nd, and then be advanced to 3rd on a Bo Bichette groundout, bringing Kevin Cash from his dugout, called to the bullpen, and lefty veteran Jalen Beeks. Beeks would have to face Alejandro Kirk first with the game-tying run at 3rd.
The 2-0. Fastball, a little cue shot, hugging the line at first. Coming down the line to score is Guerrero. A shovel by Beeks to first to get the out on Kirk. Good read by Guerrero on the little spinner. He bolts to the dish and we're tied 1-1.
Vladdy scores, but Kirk gets the better of Beeks.
Me.
Ties the game. That'd be it. Teoscar Hernandez would strike out to end the inning, but came back Alec Manoa for the seventh. Remember, Manoa wasn't feeling too hot. He was being praised for going out for the inning, but just a couple pitches into the at-bat.
The 0-1. In the air, out to left. Hit pretty well. Tapia goes back, feeling for the wall. Jumps at the wall. Can't pull it back. It's gone. An opposite field home run. Jonathan Aranda with his first in the major leagues.
Aranda gets his first career home run facing Manoa there. The Rays very quickly retake their lead. That would be it for Manoa. Anthony Bass would come in, finish off the inning. Colin Pache would come into the game for the Rays, threw four straight balls to Espinal. He'd also walk Danny Jansen, but not before Espinal would advance to third on a wild pitch. That brought Whit Merrifield to the plate.
Swings at the first pitch, bounds the ball inside the third base bag and up the left field line. The game is tied. Zimmer's flying around the bases. He's going to score. Whit Merrifield powers the Blue Jays back on top. 3-2 Toronto.
Ben have a five-hour energy between innings? My goodness, he was fired up for that call. I can't wait to hear this next one as George Springer came to the plate next.
The 0-1. Springer smokes it. Deep left field. That ball is gone! A long time coming for George Springer. He circles the bases. He's the sixth Blue Jay with 20 or more homers. Number 20 for George is a doozy. 5-2 Toronto here in the seventh.
Three pitches, four runs plated. Jays take a 5-2 lead. They punch Pache in the mouth. He'd be replaced by Kevin Hergett, 31 years old. He's a career minor leaguer, but with the score the way it was, throw him in, make his major league debut. He'd get Vladdy and Bo to pop out to end the inning. Eventually, the Jays would wrap this thing up. Jordan Romano would get called in, but then the Jays would add more runs. So Zach Pop came in. He had a 5-run lead. Just needed to get three outs from Zach Pop. Wouldn't be that hard.
Romano cups his glove over his left ear so he can hear the pitchcom device. 25,000 plus at Rogers Center. Tying run at the plate. And the 0-2. Swinging a ground ball to Bichette. On the backhand. A pickup, a throw to second. In time to retire the Rays.
So that was the end of the eighth. That was Jordan Romano. We'll skip ahead to the very end of the game when Zach Pop came in. All he had to do was get those three outs and hold on to a 5-run lead.
Two down. Randy Arozarena swings at the first pitch. A hopper down to the third baseman. Chapman throws to first to finish the ball game. The Blue Jays go through a long day at Rogers Center, pick up a doubleheader split. They post a 7-2 win over the Tampa Bay Rays. They erupt for six unanswered runs through the seventh and the eighth inning.
That's a big one. One win and one loss in the doubleheader. The Jays can win the five-game series if they win this evening. It's a 5:07 first pitch on Sportsnet West and right here on 960. Ross Stripling will face Drew Rasmussen for the Rays. But a couple big games. The Jays get a victory with Alec Manoa on the bump. He also posted after the game a Jordan flu game picture on his Instagram, for what it's worth.
Wow. Good for him. I mean, I'm not playing with the flu.
Was it you who was tweeting about the Rough Riders playing with the flu last weekend?
It was me.
The Rough Riders were feeling a little...
The Rough Riders got smashed by the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, and everyone was making a big deal about how great the Bombers were. Meanwhile, we knew all these guys had the flu. You don't need to go into the gory details here on the radio, but I'm sorry. If I'm sick, I'm not playing football. I'm not playing baseball.
Elsewhere in the majors, Padres and Mariners beginning a two-game set in Seattle. Logan Gilbert for the M's, Yu Darvish for the Padres, and Darvish with another great outing. Eight innings of shutout ball with seven strikeouts, only two hits allowed. Trade deadline acquisition, Josh Hader got the save. It was fellow deadline acquisition Juan Soto helping with the win.
Juan Soto has walked twice in tonight's game.
Slowly grounded. Seawald is going to flip to first base for the out, and a run will score. Nola comes in from third, and the Padres take a 2-0 lead. So Soto on the ground out picks up an RBI, and the Padres get their second run.
2-0, the final score. Mariners and Rays sit tied for second and third wild card spots, a half game back of Toronto. Big win for the Padres, who they won't win their division. The Dodgers became the first team to clinch a playoff spot last night. San Diego's 20 games back of L.A. for the division lead. Wild card or bust for the Padres. They're in the third position, a game and a half back of the Phillies and two games up on the Brewers. That series concludes this afternoon, first pitch just after 2. With the win, the Jays keep... With the Jays' win, they keep the Yankees and the AL East division title within eyesight. The Yankees were in Boston for a quick two-gamer starting Tuesday. Back-and-forth affair. It actually needed extra innings. Gleyber Torres at the dish with the bases loaded and two outs.
Lined into right center field. It is a base hit. That'll split the outfielders and go to the wall. IKF scores. Judge scores. Florial falls. Gets back up. And he'll score. It's a bases-clearing double for Gleyber Torres. And the Yankees lead 7-4.
The Sox would actually attempt to come back in the bottom of the inning, but just not enough. They lose 7-6. Aaron Judge with his 56th home run of the season in the victory. Not great for the Jays. They're still six games back of the Yankees, who wrap the series at 5-10 tonight. The Orioles beat the Nationals, the first of a two-game mini set in Washington. A couple runs scored in the fifth inning. Saw them come from behind to win 4-3. But the Orioles still five games back of Tampa for a wild card spot as the race four positions in the playoffs is kind of starting to sputter with the final day of the season exactly 3 weeks away. Orioles and Nats complete their mini set tonight just after 5. The race for the AL Central Division crown, it's tighter and relevant to the wild card teams as Houston and New York are trending towards buys in the first round. Cleveland, the top team in the Central, they were hosting the red-hot Mike Trout and his Angels for the second of a three-game set. Trout looking to tie the MLB record with a home run in an eighth straight contest, but he couldn't get it. Streak ends at 7 for Trout. The game did feature the long ball, though. It was tied at 1 when the winning run came in the sixth inning.
There's a ball. Boom. Deep left field. Get up. Goodbye. Man, is this kid something special. Down 0-2. That wasn't even a great pitch to hit. He just went down and muscled it out of here. Guardians now lead it 3-1.
That's the eighth home run for the rookie right fielder Oscar Gonzalez. Third of the month, a two-run shot to make it 3-1. And that's the final scores. The Guardians get an important win. The series will wrap just after 11 this morning. But could the White Sox keep pace with the Guardians? They were starting their own mini set with the Rockies in the Windy City. Sox struck out early. They never looked back.
That ball is smashed. Left center field. He's done it again. Eloy Jimenez with a great approach, as you said, Gordon, and it's 3-0 White Sox.
And I love this from him after the game. 13th home run of the season for Eloy Jimenez gave the Sox an early 3-0 lead. They win 4-2. How about this from his post-game interview with NBC Sports Chicago?
What does it feel like when you hit a ball like that in the first inning?
Good.
Yeah, but like, we heard the sound up here.
Good. What I can say, it feels good.
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 How was it? Hey, Danny, good. how's your golf game?
Good, good.
What was your favorite part about Stampeders practice? Was it the weather? How was the weather, Danny?
Good.
Do you like riding your bike? Why do you like riding good. Your bike? Is it because... I'm not even doing right questions. I'm all flustered here. My goodness. We'll get into... Good, yeah. Sox and Rockies will wrap their set just after noon today. Both teams win. The Guardians still three games up on the Sox, but an interesting race to keep an eye on.
Good.
We'll end here at Stampeders practice. Some good news, Danny Austin, as far as the injuries go.
Yeah, there was lots to like. I'm trying to think of what particular good news we saw.
Sean McEwen
was back, yes. Thank you for the reminder. Sean McEwen, multi-time All-Star center. I do think they've missed him. Well, I think Bryce Bell has been good. We saw Javon Elliott, who's a defensive back that a lot of us are really excited to finally see this season. He's had a groin injury that's sort of messed with him pretty good.
But there was also some bad news.
Yes, was going to get to that. I will introduce the caveat that this is not actually bad news. It just appeared to be bad news.
Okay.
Receiver Trey Odoms-Dukes, who had kind of stepped in for Kamar Jordan, who's on the six-game injured list, had a pretty good first game. He was out, as well as Rene Paradis, who, you know, is arguably the greatest
CFL kicker
of all time. Both were out, but we did ask Dave Dickinson, and he said, look, I like the job the medical staff's done. I'm expecting both of them to be available against the D.C. Lions on Saturday, so not sure we have to worry about that one too much.
Good.
Good, yeah. Well, thank goodness. Eloy's happy about it. Hey, also wanted to let you know Canada beat Korea in Davis Cup action.
Got it done.
That's it.
And good night and good luck to you, sir.
That's the Morning Report, and it's brought to you by Motorworks, exceeding all expectations, BMW Repairs and Service, in a state-of-the-art facility where they'll meet and beat all competitors' quotes on 51st Ave and 3rd Street Southeast. Around the corner, the head coach of the Calgary Stampeders is set to join us. We're going to fact-check everything that Danny just told us with the head coach around the corner. You feel confident with what you've just told the fans?
I mean, in all seriousness, yes, 100%. I didn't lie. I didn't just come on here and mislead people.
Okay, well, we'll find out around the corner. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.